Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are listening to Animal Wise Radio, streaming, blogging, podcasting at animalwiseradio.com.
Well, we're very pleased to have our next guest joining us. His name is Jay Feldman. He is the co-founder and executive director of an organization called Beyond Pesticides. Their mission is to help us understand how pesticides impact our lives and our environment, and to help kind of watch what's happening with governmental regulations and in the government with regards to how they're being approved and how they're being used. Boy, there's a lot of stuff going on in the news that is tied to this topic. The reason that we found Jay and asked him to join us is that we've been really interested in what's known as colony collapse disorder amongst beekeepers, and we'll be focusing our attention on that conversation in a leaked EPA document that has shed some new light on this kind of ongoing quote-unquote mystery. So we want to welcome you to Animal Wise Radio, Jay.
Thank you very much.
Tell our listeners first about this leaked document. And I understand I misspoke in the last segment that the document wasn't leaked through WikiLeaks, but it was a leaked document that came out about the same time as all the other WikiLeaks stuff.
So yeah, coincidentally, yeah.
So tell us about this document and how it was leaked and what's in the document.
Well, this is a document that was produced internally in the Ecological Effects Division of EPA's pesticide program, and actually presented to the guy who will be on the phone on the program next, Tom Theobald, who's a beekeeper in Colorado, because as a result of colony collapse disorder, many beekeepers, Tom is a leader among them, have tried to communicate with the regulatory agencies that have authority over agriculture and questions around pesticide review and evaluation, and have developed relationships. And it's very interesting, this document, which is really reviewing old data that the agency has been utilizing since, going back at least to 2003, found that the review that the agency had done and the data it had relied on was really inadequate for purposes of registering this product. We've been referring to this as core data because it's essential data necessary to make safety determinations. And without that data, the agency cannot reach any conclusions about safety, and in our view, should not be allowing the registration of that material. I should say one more thing. I mean, I think your listeners should be aware that EPA is under extreme political pressure. You know, it's dealing with and registering the chemical industry, a lot of money, a lot of investment in these products. Well, and so when this thing was first registered, we're talking about a chemical in the neonicotinoid family called clothianidin, and that chemical had been registered for use on corn. And see, the registrants were coming back to expand their uses to cotton and mustard seed. And at that point, someone in the agency, a scientist, basically looking at the data said, the study we've been using for corn really can't be used for cotton and seed because it's just no good. It just doesn't meet the standard.
You've given us a lot of information in the past 2 minutes, and I'd like to stop and maybe give you a moment. We're going to hold those thoughts and dive into them deeper in the next segment when we bring Tom, the beekeeper, on board. But I would like you to explain a little bit more just about Beyond Pesticides and how this weaves in very clearly to your mission.
Yeah. Well, I got involved in this back in the late 70s when we were approached by farm worker organizations who were representing workers who were being poisoned in the fields. And at that time, the Code of Federal Regulations in terms of worker protection, by the way, farm workers are not protected under the Occupational Safety and Health Act. They're protected by, at least theoretically, by the Office of Pesticide Programs in the EPA. Mm. So they don't enjoy the same level of protections that are afforded other workers in the workplace. And we were approached by groups that said, basically, we're not being protected. President Carter had just been elected. There was a level of excitement, actually, around issues like this. And they basically committed, under threat of litigation that had preceded the administration, they decided that they were going to look into this issue of worker protection for farm workers. And so I went out in the field, talked to farm workers throughout the southern tier of the United States, starting in Florida, Texas, California, meeting with workers, documenting the hazards, and that formed the basis of the organization. At the time, I was working for another organization, but as I traveled the country and spoke with people that were poisoned by pesticides, and in addition to the farm workers, I should say, we brought in small farmers as well, many of whom were using pesticides and found their crops damaged, their health affected, their family's health affected. And we documented all this, and as you can imagine, it generated a lot of political fallout.
We're going to hold that thought right there. We're going to continue the conversation with Jay Feldman, and we're going to be joined by a beekeeper, Tom Theobald, when we come back from this. Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are back with Animal Wise Radio. Yeah, some people aren't no damn good. Not our guests, though.
No, we're so pleased to have Jay Feldman, Executive Director of Beyond Pesticides, and Tom Theobald, who is a beekeeper in Colorado. He's been at that work for about 35 years.
And we're just thrilled to have you here. The conversation is big and broad, and it relates to
bees and a whole lot of other stuff that we'll probably trip over in the next half hour.
And Tom, tell us, tell our listeners the name of the company that you have.
The Honey Farm.
Yes, it's the Niwot Honey Farm in Niwot, Colorado.
Okay.
Small town, small business, one-man operation.
And
I get along really well with the help.
We're glad to hear that. And as I said in the introduction, we're talking about bees in the less than happy context of a document that came out of the EPA. It was leaked. It landed in your lap, apparently, Tom.
Yes.
We have Jay joining us as someone who's been involved in understanding the relationship between pesticides, chemical use, and farm workers over the years for an organization called Beyond Pesticides. Mike and I were sort of looking at each other, mouths agape on the break, thinking, where do we even start to pick up the conversation again? And I think perhaps we should step back and talk a little bit about the study, the document that came out identifying a study that seemed to allow the use of this pesticide called
clothianidin.
Yeah.
I was practicing earlier.
I've been mispronouncing it. So.
Clothianidin.
Clothianidin, I think, is the common use.
Okay.
And how that all evolved.
Why is the study that the EPA is talking about in this leaked document, why is the study flawed?
Well, let me try to approach that. The clothianidin was given a conditional registration in 2003 over the objections of the scientists of the Environmental Fate and Effects Division, who felt that work should be done prior to registration, largely because of the problems that had been experienced in France and some of the other European countries. But their advice was overridden, and a conditional registration was granted, the condition being the completion of this, what was called the chronic life cycle study, to determine the safety of this product. It was to have been completed the first growing season, delivered to the EPA by December of the next year. The first date was passed. They asked for an extension, and it was granted. They overran the extension. The study wasn't done until August of 2007. And what it consisted of, and I put it in a context that I think agricultural people may be able to understand a little better. Let's say that you had a noxious weed that was affecting your cattle, and you wanted to see just how much of it they were ingesting and whether it was a problem. So you plant 2.5 acres of this noxious weed, and you put your cattle on that 2.5 acres. The only problem is that 2.5 acres isn't fenced, and they're free to range over 2,000 or 3,000 acres of very fertile rangeland. Well, what do you think the conclusions would be? How significantly is that going to be represented in their diet? And that's exactly what was done with the bees. Four colonies, mm-hmm. 2.5 acres, a crop of canola planted from treated seed. The bees were free to range over thousands of acres.
Right.
And we kind of know about bees that, you know, canola probably isn't one of their favorite things. They love corn.
It should have been tested on corn, and it should have been done in the United States. But instead, it was done on canola. But even at that, it was not sound science.
Right, because bees do fly.
Well, and how often when somebody, for example, plants a crop of corn, how often do they plant 2 acres? I mean, more often than not, it's hundreds or thousands of acres.
Of course. And those bees that were on that test plot would forage out for a mile, 2 miles. That's the common range of a colony of bees. So they were foraging out over a wide area, and that test planting represented an infinitesimal portion of their total range.
And so, Tom, your assessment is that it wasn't a large enough plot to be reasonable in this study, and the results that were reported from this were more positive than one would suspect the results to be.
Exactly.
So,
yes, and that was the conclusion
science.
Of EPA.
It was of no scientific merit whatsoever. And what happened was, I wrote an article in Bee Culture magazine in July, and I had uncovered a series of documents which showed the handling of this product all the way up to the final registration. And I questioned the validity of this study, and at least in part because of that, Bayer had come to the EPA and asked for approval for seed treatment on mustard and cotton. Mm-hmm. And the EFED scientists went back and reviewed the initial study, in part at least because of the article that I had written, and concluded that it was not sound science. Well, this was the study upon which the conditional registration was contingent, the completion of which cleared the way for full registration. Now we have a product that has serious questions. It's been on the market for 8 growing seasons. It has serious questions as to its safety. And the basic study which cleared the way for its registration is not valid.
Well,
on what basis should it continue to be sold?
And I would like to roll the clock back a little bit and talk about what happened in Germany and in other parts of the European Union relating to this, because there were known problems when that study was conducted.
That's why the EFED scientists questioned it initially. They were concerned about the previous experience with a cousin, imidacloprid, which was the first neonicotinoid to be released. It's even more interesting than that because some very convincing arguments have been raised that clothianidin was not registered, was not rushed to the market because of some dramatic insect scourge, but because the patent was about to run out on imidacloprid. So we've been subjected to these dangers to protect Bayer's market share.
And Bayer is the maker of this.
Bayer is the owner of these neonicotinoids.
I'd like to pose this question to Jay. We've tossed around a couple of multisyllabic words here. Clothianidin, nicotinoids, or neonicotinoids, and I understand that is a form that comes from the nicotine plants. Could you elaborate a little bit on where we're seeing these used generally, how they're being applied? We've touched on them, but could you just kind of condense it again for us?
Yeah, I mean, these are known as systemic pesticides. They're basically treated in the seed of the plant and then taken up by the vascular system of the plant and expressed through the pollen. So, you know, it's a disaster in the making from an ecological standpoint because you've got fields of crop out there that are basically poison for anything that any insect that touches it, you know, that comes in contact with it. And in the case of contaminated poison with a neurotoxic chemical that is, you know, non-specific and affects non-target organisms, as they call it, there's very, very difficult to mitigate risks, as EPA likes to refer to their regulatory restrictions. And one of the ways they try to do this is by labeling some of these pesticides, and then, it's really a seed, so you can see the disconnect between the time the seed is planted and the plant is in bloom, that there are restrictions imposed on the grower not to allow the bees to forage while the plant is in bloom. Very difficult thing to enforce.
I'm going to say impossible.
What do you stand out in the cornfield and say, no, go. Bad bees, no.
You know, that has been the theory that EPA has used in the non-systemic world, you know, that in effect, you know, the grower goes out there, has his field treated, and doesn't actually apply that pesticide either by
spray,
most often by aerial application, while the plant is in bloom. You know, so the theory being that contact poison will not affect the non-target organism because it's not being applied at the time that the bees are in the field. Very difficult to control that.
Well, and what's
when we're talking systemic?
And let's talk about. I don't mean to broaden it too far, but I'm wondering, Tom, let's talk about pollinators for a moment. It's not just the honeybee we're talking about here.
No, it's very interesting. This is very quickly becoming a much larger issue than even the beekeepers imagined. There's a book that's recently come out by a Dutch toxicologist, Dr. Henk Tennekes, and the title is The Systemic Insecticides, A Disaster in the Making. And he's documented the levels of the earlier neonicotinoid, imidacloprid, in Dutch waters and elsewhere in Europe, and has connected that with significant bird losses, and believes that that's a consequence of the fact that the insect population has been so devastated by these systemic insecticides that has in turn damaged the bird population.
Well, we know butterflies, migratory butterflies are in peril as well.
The unique aspect of these chemicals is they interfere with nerve receptors, and they are cumulative and irreversible. So very, very, we're finding now as research is emerging that very, very small doses over time can produce a dramatic effect, the same as you might get from an acute incident with very high doses. So this is, and this product is water soluble, it migrates in the groundwater, it can accumulate with successive plantings, it has a half-life of years in the soil. This is a very serious problem.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting to note that, you know, at least if you look at when this product has been used in the United States, it seems to roughly correlate directly with when we started talking about this colony collapse disorder with bees, which has been a huge problem. I mean, at least it's coincided with my awareness of colony collapse disorder. Does there appear to be a correlation there in your eyes?
Well, certainly there is by time, but we need more science to connect those dots. But the science is emerging, and it's in the 8 years that clothianidin has been on the market, for example. The evidence that is emerging is that it's much less safe than we originally believed. It hasn't proven its safety. To the contrary,
well,
evidence is emerging globally.
We're going to have to take a brief break. We're going to come back with more of this conversation, more about how it's used here and what are the other potential issues. I mean, for example, it seems like if we're putting on crops and the chemical is in the systemically in that crop and then we eat it or we use it in pet food or animal feed. It seems like there's a whole host of issues. We'll be back with that after this. Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are wisely tuned to Animal Wise Radio. Well, we are in the middle of a fascinating conversation with Jay Feldman, who is with Beyond Pesticides. And we're also talking with Tom Theobald, who's a beekeeper with Niwot Honey Farms in Colorado. We're talking about colony collapse disorder, pesticides, a leaked EPA document.
How those things could very well be linked as the systemic pesticide that's impacting the pollen that the bees are eating. That connection doesn't seem hard to make just to a layperson like myself. And before we kind of talk about what we can do or how we can maybe as a society approach this differently, I want to ask Tom, what is the impact that you're seeing among your colleagues and even at your own farm? How has that impact been? How have you been experiencing this collapse disorder or hearing about it?
Well, it's been devastating, and it's been going on for several years, and beekeepers are like family farmers and ranchers. They'll kill themselves to keep their operations going, and they've done that, and as a consequence, they've probably postponed this crisis to the limit. They can't hold out much longer. You can't lose 30 to 60% of your base each year and stay in business. And that's fundamental to about a third of American agriculture, that pollination connection. The ripple effect is going to be enormous. This is really an issue of national interest, and it needs to be addressed as such.
Well, because it seems obvious that if you're, you're a beekeeper and your bees are flying miles, you have no control over what those bees might encounter. And if people are putting this stuff, in the ground and growing the systemic toxin, there's no way to keep your bees from it.
In the past, with the old generation of pesticides, in many cases, we could close them in or we could keep them out of the area during the spraying and during the residual effect of the pesticide. But with these new ones, with these systemics, there's no escape. There's no safety. There's 88 million acres of corn in this country. And it's pretty, think about Minnesota, southern Minnesota, in the summertime. How much corn do you have?
That's a lot. That's what we have.
Yeah, we have corn and then
most of that corn has been treated.
Right.
And the farmers are on the receiving end because if they were to choose to plant untreated seed, they would have a difficult time finding it.
This is something we have talked about on Animal Wise Radio, and Jay, on the break, you talked about, let's go to that space of what can people do. I know one thing I choose to do personally is to buy everything I can from small organic growers because I know they're working hard to protect seed quality, viability, and to create habitat so that they're not a monoculture that's likely to be as susceptible to some of the broad diseases or infestations that you hear devastating some of the larger farms. But take this where you want to go, Jay.
What else can people do?
Well, I think that's a key thing that we have to, in our individual purchasing decisions, really look for organic and support organic to the extent we can, because overall we need to bring down American agriculture dependency on these types of seeds and this type of agriculture. Organic really is, because there's a certified system, there's a review of the materials allowed, there's an enforcement mechanism, really is an institutionalized system. You know, you see that USDA certified label that we can control as a market and as a society. You know, when people say you can't connect the problems we're seeing with the neonicotinoids and colony collapse disorder, it's really troubling to me because we are a crisis-driven society. You know, we wait to see a problem bubble up almost to the point of extinction. We wait for animals to be extinct practically before we step in. We need, in this case, to be precautionary. because we know that all the pieces of information that we need to make a conclusive decision to protect bees is not there currently. So we should err on the side of caution, and we should seek to transition away from dependency on those materials before it's too late, before we put all the small farmers out of business. Not just the small farmers, the large, you know, agribusiness operations are dependent on these guys like Tom, you know, to cultivate their crops, mm-hmm. basically, to, you know, to pollinate their crops. So I think we you know, joined with the beekeeping industry and basically asked the administrator of EPA to do two things, to remove this chemical from the market. I mean, there's no reason, given what's going on in Europe and what we know and what we don't know, the degree of uncertainty, to allow this to continue, given that we know that the underlying study is just no good. The second thing in that request is that they stop, that is, the agency stops registering these things under what they call the conditional registration. Because you don't put a car on the road and then worry about whether the brakes are adequate after a million people are driving that thing. You just don't operate that way, and we shouldn't be operating that way with toxic chemicals, our food supply, and the precious honeybee, you know, which we all depend on for our food and for flower production.
Well, it seems that at minimum the way they've been handling it is reckless at best.
Reckless.
If it's not, you know, criminal, you know, my brain can't help but wonder, you know, if money exchanges hands between Bayer and other places because, you know, in order to grease the skids to get their products to market.
Well, it's a little more insidious than that, actually, because there's something we've traced over the years, which is typically called the revolving door. Mm-hmm. People move from government into industry and back, mm-hmm. back and forth. And
you don't see any of them becoming beekeepers.
Oh, really? That's not where the money is, Tom? Is that what you're telling us?
I'm shocked.
This has been a fascinating conversation. We got to kind of tie it up. And I do want to make people aware, Jay, of your organization's website, beyondpesticides.org. People can join your organization. People can support this important work that you're doing. And, Tom, you had also mentioned that there are several websites.
BoulderCountyBeekeepers.org. People can educate themselves. They can see the article that I wrote. They can see the press release, the leaked document, the letter to Lisa Jackson. It's all there. They can make their own decisions. They
and also, we both,
themselves.
Both Tom and I are collaborating with another organization, Pesticide Action Network,
yes.
North America, and they also have a website, panna.org. So it's either beyondpesticides.org or panna.org, and Boulder County. Is that .org?
BoulderCountyBeekeepers.org, yeah.
Well, I will.
A good source.
Well, I would just say I'm thrilled that you. Both of you could spend so much time with us today. We, you know, had more than a half hour, and we barely scratched the surface of it. I believe, you know, we could certainly have you back and talk about different components of this. I mean, I think that this is from an environmental. It's from an environmental perspective. It opens up a gaping hole that we need to look at. And,
yes.
And I really encourage people who are concerned about the environment, their own health, animals.
Their own eating?
They need to start looking at this issue because I think it can help us inform other issues and the way our government works in these regulatory areas.
Yes.
So I thank you both for your important work. We've got a whole other live hour of Animal Wise Radio coming right up.